Cliffcentral.
The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
Cliffcentral.com.
Did you ever believe in the idea that my domestic worker is family? Was that, first of all, when you grew up, was that a common idea or ideal?
I think that it was in some homes.
Okay.
As I say, because I had a very present mom, and Daisy didn't have children. I keep on referring to Daisy, but actually neither did Miriam and neither did Bella, strangely. So because there wasn't a child factor, there wasn't that inclusion of bringing the domestic worker's child into the home.
Okay.
And so I personally didn't feel the family connection. The domestic worker was something special. I can't quite define the role. There was security. There was somebody who was taking care of me and taking care of the home and created an atmosphere in the home. It made a difference, a huge difference. It wasn't like a nothing person. I mean, the person had a very, very strong presence in the home. But our family, I don't think our family confused domestic workers with family. There was care and kindness. It's changed a little bit now because Felicia has got two little girls and they sometimes come along to work. In no way do I ever think I'm their moms. And but I certainly would be concerned about Beyonce, how she's doing at school, her reports, her name
Beyonce.
Really is Beyonce. And she's
love
a little
it.
Superstar. And she has got the most lovely personality. And so I really know Felicia's family and she knows my family.
Okay.
She's got a new baby, Nolwazi, and Nolwazi comes with her every day. And Nolwazi's close to Lulu and Frankie, who are my little children, the Dachshunds, of course.
Okay.
I think because there is this kind of protectiveness of my little doggies, of her kids, of there's a much more caring family kind of feel. I don't confuse Felicia with family. She's got a very lovely, strong family, very wonderful relationship with her parents. She's from Zimbabwe. But we know a lot about each other's family. She knows the dynamics with my parents. She knows their illnesses. I know hers, down to her mom having asthma. Her father used to be a drinker and he's no more. He's a churchgoer. We know each other's stuff. She knows my dad has Alzheimer's and she asks me about him. And so we really understand and care for each other and try and make each other's lives as easy as possible. And I try to make Felicia's working conditions as lovely as possible. And we call it, we've also got what we call time sharing. Felicia frees me. She gives me freedom to do my stuff in life, including going on holiday. Felicia and Beyonce and Nolwazi move in, and Alex is welcome, but he doesn't want to. That's her partner.
Oh, okay.
And they come and stay, and then we go on holiday.
And it's time sharing. Oh, I love
it. Time they move in, and we move out. And
I love it.
So we kind of have quite a sharing relationship.
Yeah.
Is any of that out of guilt?
Possibly, possibly. I really love Felicia as a personality. But the reason I say possibly is because if Felicia was white and had a fair start and an equal start, she also had a lousy having – she was a refugee and had to leave Zimbabwe. And she's incredibly educated and she should have a better position than a domestic worker.
Yeah.
So also the injustices disturb me. The fact that Felicia, for me, could really have a top job, whether it be in politics, although that's not saying as much as
but as it should.
She's exceptional. I mean, she just is such an exceptional woman. She's a nurturer. She can fix anything. Anything that doesn't work, I say, Fee, do you think you can figure it out or must I call someone in? And either she figures it out or she calls in somebody she knows and they fix it for a lot less
amazing
than a contractor.
Ingenuity.
So, but when you say the guilt thing, I think Felicia's got a bum deal in that she's a domestic worker. She really has the capability and the personality of running an ad agency. Again, I don't know that I'm using the best, but she could be in industry, she could be in trade. She's terrific. And because
so that, wait, now we've got that politician and agency bottom of the barrel.
And when she and I have arguments, she could have been a politician. She's so smart. She's right. Incredible. But I think that it's an interesting question whether if it was a white person who had had equal opportunity, whether I would feel I need to contribute to her kids' education and to the well-being. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's just a human or humane thing, or if it has got to do with a measure of guilt. I'm not sure. I think it might have to do with a bit of both, but I really care about making people in my life happy. I'm not trying to kumbaya it, but I like people, whoever comes into my home, people at work. I'm a very one-on-one person. It's important to me that I acknowledge, and it might also be a guilt thing, even when I go to gym, I thank the lady for cleaning the showers and the floors because actually it makes my gym experience lovely.
Absolutely.
So I've become conscious. Whereas for many years I wasn't, I've become conscious of these menial workers and tasks that give me a life of pleasantry and luxury. And I think that, I don't know what's guilt or
what's... Do you have any concept of what conscientized you? Because a lot of people don't.
Look, certainly in my university years and in the 80s, I did mix with political people. I was part of more political movements like the UDF. We had our phones tapped. Still, I wasn't, ANC.
Badass.
What did you do?
Badass, yeah. They were so mad. They were so mad.
Wow,
they weren't
okay.
doing much. The women I worked with, they were all social workers. They were quite politicized and they were very active in power. And UDF. I don't think I was hugely active, but I was part of the crowd. But I certainly started waking up then. Mm. That was a big wake-up time of my life. And actually at that stage, I remember, I don't know if it was late 80s or 90s, I had a boyfriend. He was a lawyer, and he was the lawyer for the Delmas treason trialist. So,
oh, wow.
And he always had people staying in his home who were in hiding. So I certainly had a big political innings after university and post-university, which, thank God, I mean, it woke me up. And then
I just really hope it won't take that sort of exposure for someone to understand the gravity of our condition.
But also, I also wonder whether it's what happened was a kind of racial conscientization or a human conscientization, because you're saying, and I guess when we ask about guilt, what you've described to me as guilt is more of a humane guilt, right? That comes with interacting with somebody or having any kind of power relationship with somebody who was hard done by or was at a disadvantage to you. Okay, so you're saying Felicia, for instance, just as a human being, not as a black female, but as a human being, has been dealt a raw deal. You know, you've had I guess you've had a head start, and so that's kind of where your guilt comes from. And you're saying that would apply to any human being you felt was somehow less fortunate. But I wonder.
But I also benefited, I suppose. You know.
So yes, this is what I want to understand is what level of that guilt is racial. So if it was a white woman in Felicia's exact circumstances, would you feel a similar guilt or a different guilt?
I think the apartheid system fills me with endless guilt, and part of that is the domestic worker. I mean, so as I've said to you before. When I drive my car and I'm a single woman in a comfortable car on my own with the aircon or the heater on, and I look up and I see people in a bus, I want to cringe. I actually do feel uncomfortable about it. I haven't started catching buses yet. So, but the point is, for a while I drove.
Not good enough.
It's not good enough.
Amanda.
I'm very conscious. I don't know if it is good enough. I don't know at what point you have to.
This is the other thing, right?
You know, at what point is it, you know, is guilt a rubbish emotion, what are you going to do about it? So yeah. I can say, well, what do I do about it on a one-to-one basis? I certainly am very aware, as I say, and thankful of people who make my life better, who do menial jobs. I mean, I understand that they're exactly the same. They've just had such a rough deal, whereas yeah. perhaps before that you do think lesser.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, sure. But there is tremendous guilt. And I sometimes think even when you talk about your domestic worker,
mm-hmm.
I think you're more entitled than me. Like you didn't grow up in a system where you were privileged because of your race.
Mm.
Maybe it was a class privilege, but the race privilege does make me squirm.
But for me, if the outcome of that or the treatment is the same, then the entitlement or non-entitlement is kind of irrelevant.
I think the treatment can be the same, but I think the outcome of the treatment can be different based on who it comes from.
Okay. When you talk down to a person who doesn't have power, I think that is just such a hideous human quality. Whether it is, you know, a beggar and not acknowledging them, or if it is somebody who's a cleaner and walking past them like they don't exist, you know, it's such a lack of consciousness.
Right.
And that for me, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your skin color is. I just think there needs to be an awareness of another human being, that yeah. they've got a mother and a father, or they might not, but that they've got feelings. And that's what happens when you are part of a system. You forget about that. You forget your domestic worker is a woman. And I started getting my periods. I don't know if we can keep this on radio, but it happens. 12 or 13.
It happens regardless of whether we keep it on radio.
Radio or not, it will still keep happening. The ages get younger, but it will happen. But, you know, it was things like not even thinking about sanitary towels for domestic workers. It was just sort of domestic workers were there. And I think that's the horror of the then versus now, being so aware of Felicia's got a life, you know, and I'm very aware of her life, and I'm aware of the nuances in it. She'll always know more about mine. She spends her day in
your space,
in my space, so she does. But I really know a lot, and I care a lot about her. Mm.
If you're someone's PA, you always know a lot more about them than they know about you.
Yeah.
Right? Is that a similar thing or not?
What you're saying, the PA will always know more about the boss.
Yes.
I suppose so.
Is there an injustice in that?
But that's so different.
How do you think it's different? No, and I'm literally just throwing it out.
I think a lot of the personal is written out of that. You know, because they still, like, the work plays out in more public spaces than personal. And people are allowed more authority in more of their private space.
Okay. No. And so then that maybe is about assessing the power dynamic and how can we equalize it. But as a function of the role, I don't think there's any inherent injustice.
Mm. And I don't even think there needs to be an equalizing of power.
Mm.
I think there should just not be an exploitation of the power that exists.
Mm.
Because there will always be power, I think.
Mm.
There will. I think the fact that you're paying somebody money and that their existence depends on that money.
Yeah, someone is allowed to expect of someone else.
Yes.
Actually, but vice versa, yeah.
Yeah, but the I guess the transaction has to be fairer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you spoke about on one of your other shows, you spoke about actually it being more of a business contract, you know, that you kind of know less about one another, but there's a contract in place, and there is RP5, but there are pay slips and there is medical aid. Mm. And the same as when you would go into any place of employment, but that you kind of take away from the personal relationship. And it's a very interesting thing to debate. I found that a very interesting thing, because I'd be very interested if I said to Felicia, would you prefer that relationship, even if I paid you more? I don't know. I don't think so. I think there's something very rich in our relationship for both of us.
Yeah.
I just think that there's such an added dimension of caring for each other.
Yeah.
Of and being aware of another person's life, deeply yeah. aware of.
But at the same time, I think that can happen within a professional relationship, right? Within a relationship that is structured.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. that's true.
People have different relationships with their bosses in very corporate environments. Some PAs are closer to their bosses than others, you know,
mm-hmm.
for instance. Mm. Some consultants are closer to their clients than others.
Mm.
So I think there can be varying degrees of humanity within any relationship, as long as it is a fair transaction.
Yeah.
Well, that's absolutely right. At the basis, it needs to be a fair transaction.
Okay, so we discussed the apartheid time. So let's go to post-apartheid and essentially democracy and freedom.
Mm.
Firstly, which domestic worker was in your home when that period happened, when freedom came?
Funnily enough, I didn't have one. No, I'd moved in with friends into an apartment in Yeovil.
How old were you?
20, in my 20s. I don't remember specifically. Mm-hmm. But I remember I lived quite a few years with friends in Yeovil. And we didn't have a domestic worker. And I remember, when Nelson Mandela was released and we all sat around watching him come out of prison together.
How did you guys all feel? I mean, did you discuss it?
We were amazed and thrilled. I mean, we were the lefties at that stage. We were beyond thrilled. It was just the most incredible moment. I remember then I was very friendly with a girl, Jennifer Ferguson. She was a singer, like a protest singer.
Mm.
And for years she had been singing protest songs. And then, you know, then I was part of this whole protest. We used to, but mine was always more culturally. I used to go to the Market Theatre and watch protest theatre, was at Albert and all the Barney Simon shows at the Market, and look at David Goldblatt's photography. My friend at Varsity was actually William Kentridge's sister, Eliza, and we were friends from Varsity. So I was in circles where we really were rooting for the overthrow.
Okay.
And, you know, by then I really did understand the inequities, and I was thrilled with the change in government.
So you didn't have a domestic worker at that point?
No.
Okay.
No. So I don't have an association with that.
Mm. Right, did you still at that point have a relationship with any of them, or
no?
Had they kind of just moved on?
Yeah. Mm.
Okay. And then
it's part of the problem.
So let's ask you hypothetically then. How do you imagine the end of apartheid affected relationships white employers had with their domestic workers? That must have been mighty awkward.
You know, I don't think that hugely besides a dollop more of guilt.
Oh, really?
No, I don't think so. I think that there was still an awareness of the dependency of the job, of that these people still need a job. I just think things kind of carried on in a weird way. Perhaps there was...
I suspected that.
I don't think there was a tremendous shift, weirdly.
But, I mean, did you maybe see, like, madams and domestic workers voting together, or...?
Not on a large scale, but I looked out for it only because you asked me. I looked at this when I went to vote now, and I went in a...
Oh, yeah?
And I did notice a couple more, and I just said to the person I was with, I said, please don't let the domestic worker get in the back. I'll throw myself. Thank God.
Did she sit in the front?
They both sat in the front. Thank goodness.
That's progress. You have no idea how much that is progress.
Now that I mentioned that, gosh, I remember how the domestic worker would sit in the back. I mean, that is just bizarre.
Mm.
But yes, so even at these elections, and I did vote in a northern suburbs area, I noticed a small number of domestic worker, and I could see because they were in uniforms. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known the difference.
Mm.
But I did notice and that.
This is why it's actually, I find it so appropriate to refer to this institution as it is, as a relic of a bygone era. Because even the fact, there is nothing you have said to me about your experiences with your domestic worker that I can't relate to.
Mm.
Having grown up in a black home with black parents with a domestic worker, And also having seen as an au pair in 2016.
But I think that's why there's such turmoil right now, because very little has changed.
It's crazy. It's absolutely nuts that there was this huge shift in 1994. In many ways, people's lives changed. My entire trajectory as a child who, what was I, five in 1994? Changed.
Yeah.
And for some reason, life didn't change for, well, I mean, okay, we surmise that life didn't change much for the women working in white homes. Not only that, but the institution didn't change. So even the women who then started working for black homes were part of a similar institution. Mm. And a similar set of norms. That blows my mind. It's
very interesting, because certainly I've noticed a tremendous change in business and the economy. As you know, I did a comedy show, and I'm not trying to push it, but you're welcome to watch it.
That's great. Do you want to plug? Plug it.
Okay, no. So, but the thing was, the original premise, and I changed the premise, but the original premise was, I'm 51, I'm white, and I'll do anything for a job. And I dropped the white part because there have been such a lot of racial issues, and I really would hate to be drawn into something like that when it's just so far from who I am. But but actually, I am very aware now at 51, and my brother's 54, white male. It's not great, and our chances are a lot less than a black person, one younger person, getting a good job. And I think that's right. I think we had our luck. But I can feel in industry.
Yes, Amanda, it's our time
it's
now.
It's your time, baby. It is your time.
And our
I'm
time.
Happy to hang on to your
oh
coattails.
My God.
But no, let me tell you.
Joke.
But no, it's not a
joke.
It's absolutely
half
not
joke.
A joke.
It is our time.
Okay, well, I don't mean it in that tone, goddammit.
It's half joke.
Change
it's
the tone.
Half joke. We know when we pitch for business, in advertising industry, for government business, skin color matters. There is a change, and quite rightly so. And I have to say that so where things certainly have changed in industry and in business and in politics, the domestic worker relationship is a bit of a relic, because I don't see tremendous change. I mean, you know about it if it's relevant to the show, but I've been trying so hard to get Sally, my temp lady, work.
Yeah.
When I hear what people want to pay, like she'll SMS me and she'll say, do you think 150 rand a day is fair, you know? And when I hear stuff that, like, you could have been asking me 25 years ago, and I'd say, that's not great. Or someone phoned me and she said, she saw my notice for Sally, and she's just had a domestic worker, and she was so cheeky. Now, remember that word cheeky? That was like the madam's worst.
Oh, wow.
To have somebody cheeky, all it meant is that they probably just spoke up.
Yeah.
I mean, but a word like cheeky for me is typifies that sort of power thing.
Yeah.
And
you hear it in the workplace as well. Like,
yeah, but
yeah.
Women are often, I think, described in patriarchal circles as being cheeky.
Yeah. As being cheeky, yeah. But so, as I say, while I certainly have felt a big shift in terms of living in South Africa, and I understand the shift, I feel the domestic worker relationship hasn't changed significantly, besides more guilt, probably slightly improved standards and a little more awareness, but that relationship certainly hasn't had a seismic shift as a lot of other things in the country have.
I think certain relationships are just always going to be driven first and foremost by self-interest. And I think it's like maybe one of those, and I don't want to expand. And that was vague.
That
maybe
was
I'll leave it at that.
I don't know what.
I know.
Sometimes maybe around the edge.
I'm censoring.
Very many things.
I have.
but I do find it interesting though that it's the most personal of professional relationships. And, you know, so it's both, it both stands to give you professional and personal gain or loss, and yet has changed the least. And why do you think that is, you know, something that is, you know, such, that straddles between both conditions? Why do you think it hasn't changed much?
Maybe because there is a sense now, there's a, it's an interesting thing. I think there's a sense of,
this is what I was censoring.
Now that it's a democratic society and everybody's got equal opportunities, people almost feel more entitled to maintain relationships, feeling that they're not racially based, because it's like everybody's got a chance now, and have almost discounted history and have discounted that people have had less education. There's an exploitativeness in that people are dependent. So there's almost like, oh, well, at least I'm giving somebody work, but they wouldn't have work. So there's almost an ugliness.
But that becomes equal to all South Africans, because we've definitely said before that domestic workers are that rare third party that is common to all South Africans. And that's really where I was trying to head with the wishy-washy self-interest in all relationships, yada yada nonsense, was, for me, a lot of systemic injustice is about the man with the biggest stick. Who has the biggest stick, right? And so I see domestic work very much as a systemic injustice. But now that has suddenly become not as racialized as it was before, but like increasingly, I think, common to all South Africans, and increasingly a classist thing.
Yeah, I think that there could be a lot of change still in that arena, and a lot more awareness. And I think that because I've also spent more time with the two of you, I'm more conscious than ever about it.
You know? Oh, okay. So that answers that question. How your personal ideas on domestic work evolved over time, and what have been the drivers of that process?
Well, a huge thing is being in my own home, as opposed to in my parents' home, and being older. And also, as I said to you earlier, as crazy as it is, having two little dogs that I am so close to and fond of, and seeing that their well-being, you know, that somebody needs to take care of them and walk, etc. It's made me a lot more dependent, I suppose.
Why are you, why do you, I feel every now and again that you have a feeling of guilt about the dogs. At the same time, I know they are so genuinely dear to you.
Oh, I think Jacob Zuma would have chosen me as a model.
Like, it's very strange to me because, okay, culturally, I didn't grow up with animals, with close relationships with pets, right, in my home. And then as I grew up and interacted with peers and went into their homes, I started to realize actually people can have these very close bonds with their pets. And now I think that I genuinely believe and respect that somebody can feel about a pet the way that they would about a child. I do.
Okay, look, I don't have kids, so I can't make that comparison, but I really love and adore those little dogs and respond in horror when they're sick, and know and care if they've been exercised, and I feel happy when I'm with them and feel very present when I go into the park with them. But I think where the guilt probably comes in is I'm aware how well treated they are. And I'm aware how a person who comes from a disadvantaged background, which is usually what a domestic worker is, could think, wow, I mean, these little dogs sleep in blankets on the couch. They do eat heels, but they also eat biltong. We discussed that,
yes.
Which is a very it's expensive. And most domestic workers, I don't know if mine could or couldn't or would put the money away, but it's an expensive thing to buy, and I give it to my dogs. And so there is that guilt, there's that awareness of they actually aren't human beings. And human beings have a lot less than my dogs, and I think that's where the guilt comes in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, some of our domestic workers that we speak to tell us that the dog sits in front and she sits at the back. So in very many ways, they are treated better. So it's not necessarily just that they're treated well, that they're sometimes treated better in relation to them.
I think it's the direct comparison.
Yeah.
And I think it's also just the awareness that you have is incredibly important. I don't think you should feel any less about your dogs, I guess is what I'm saying.
I don't think I can.
But I think it is important to be aware of that dynamic with that potential dynamic with the domestic worker.
I think that I'm not alone in that. You try and improve your domestic worker's circumstances by making things comfortable and giving presents and doing lovely things and occasional gifts. Well, not occasional, birthdays are acknowledged and Christmas and money towards kids' schooling, etc. But I think it comes down to that basic salary that is perhaps the issue of saying, actually, you cannot have a domestic worker if you can't afford to pay X. But then the argument could come in and say, oh, well, people then won't have work, you know. But I think that's a rubbish argument.
It is a rubbish argument. No, that's my worst argument.
Worst one.
Like, just pay people a pittance because else they will starve.
They'd rather have something than nothing. Jeez. I mean, that's just...
Yeah. It's so rubbish.
That's too rubbish for words. Okay. Yeah.
So do you think that your relationship with Felicia would be different if it was a man?
To an extent in that we often talk women stuff, like as moms and about men in society. I don't have a husband or a male partner, so I'm a bit disconnected in a way. But
lucky you.
But yes. So but interestingly, when Felicia's away, sometimes her brother comes to stay and look after the home, Patrick, and he's a wonderful, gentle energy. And I don't feel any differently about Patrick in the home than Felicia. He doesn't talk English as well as she does, so there's less banter. But I have equal comfort with him. I don't know if he spoke English very well, but I think a big bond with Felicia and I is that we are both women. But it's not that Patrick's got a lovely energy. He's got an easy energy.
Would you feel less comfortable or safe in any way purely because of the gender dynamic?
Possibly a bit. And Patrick is particularly gentle. And so
there is a gentleness that is required in this role, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
The gentleness is what makes me feel comfortable.
Sure. Okay.
And black, white, Indian, it wouldn't matter. A male, a regular male in the home, I would be much more cautious, or there is that degree of inequality or fear, or knowing that how strong a man is, I do have more comfort.
That's interesting,
with a female.
Because it is actually such a, like, because I guess we're asking that question around exploring ways in which this role can evolve, and how it can be de-racialized, but also potentially degendered or gender neutralized would be an interesting thing, right? For progress. And so I wonder if there are certain roles that can and should inherently only be performed by a man or a woman, and if this is one of them.
Well, it's interesting because, as I was saying, my mom seemed very happy growing up in her home. It was in the apartheid era, more so even. Well, not more so. It was what it was. But my mom grew up in a home where there were only men in the home, the cooks and the cleaners, etc. And she seemed pretty comfortable with that. But certainly when you ask me that question, Patrick for me is an exception rather than the rule. I definitely feel more comfortable having a woman in my home. And in terms of her being a nurturer and more empathic.
And it does depend on her role, right?
And even just things that, I know this is such a funny thing again, but it's like underwear. Or your personal stuff that I would feel a bit peculiar. Like when Patrick's there, I make sure that you can't keep it out of sight, but that it really is completely my own business. Right. I know you discussed it should always be, but if a load of washing goes in, a load of washing goes into me. I mean, I don't think it's such a big deal, but it is a big deal if you're expecting a male to wash and fold.
Mm. So do you think less liberties would be taken with a male domestic worker? And like in terms of maybe cooking for the family and helping children with the homework and, you know, washing underwear, those sort of things, do you think there would be less requirements of a male domestic worker?
I think that the only one thing that struck me was the kids and the homework. I think, I don't know why I feel there's more female interaction, even when you talk about being an au pair. I think that parents are more comfortable having female caregivers to their children. It somehow seems to go with the nurturing. But not with cooking, I don't think, or cleaning.
Yeah.
Maybe if one's being intimate with underwear, you'd think, oh, well, I don't want the male to be busy with my bras and panties. But I think the children is a different area, and I think that is because of the nurturing that a woman offers. Not to say men can't, but it just that, I think, is the bigger criteria, perhaps.
Okay. So have you ever visited Felicia at her home?
No, I haven't. I know she lives in Alex, and I haven't been there. And she lives in Zimbabwe, and I've asked if I could go on a trip with her because I would love to go to her home and meet her family. And
that would be cool.
She lives in a rural setup, and I would really love that. But I haven't been to Alex where she...
Is there a reason why?
No, there isn't a specific reason. I have been in the past to other – I went to Daisy's home, but, I mean, then I was a lot younger. She lived in Hammanskraal, but she lived on the premises.
Did you go with your parents?
I went with my aunt to Hammanskraal.
Okay.
I've often – not often. Often's being generous to myself. I have certainly given the tea ladies lifts home if they've needed. Mm. And I've visited their homes as well in Cape Town. The one lady came from Dunoon, and I went there and spent time with her. We just haven't set anything up. Mm. She hasn't invited me, but as I say, if she would say, would I give her a lift home? And I've offered to, or I would do it. She hasn't wanted that either, and maybe it's a pride thing on her part as well.
Mm. Mm. Would you ever ask her if you can pay her a visit?
Yeah, I've asked her about Zimbabwe. I haven't asked her about Alex.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, would you ask about Alex?
Zimbabwe. Yes, I would ask her.
Okay.
I would, definitely. And especially after speaking about it, I'm aware she has been part of my life.
Zimbabwe is a commitment.
It is a commitment, but I would love that. She showed me pics. It looks great.
It's incredible.
She stays on a little small holding and has animals and...
Yeah.
Her mom sounds like the most amazing woman. I would love to have that experience. Mm. And I've been to Alex, but I haven't been to her home. I think I would. Mm. I'd feel very sad. I mean, I know. And I think of stuff, you know, every night when I lie in my bath and I think how privileged I am. And I add more water.
more berry hot water.
And then I have a second plate of food. I just really do feel beyond privileged.
Is there value in you having this discussion for us, not for domestic workers, not for the space, but for yourself?
It's tremendously healing, and it just takes another layer off. It makes me have to think that little bit harder. Only coming into the studio and being asked certain questions has made me probe even deeper. Yeah. You just realize how deep the stuff is, and I'm tremendously grateful to have the opportunity in a safe space with the two of you to really be honest in a way that makes me feel awkward at times. That, you know.
Well, we're glad you feel safe because we definitely want to make it safe for everyone.
But it does. It really does feel safe, and I think that is important because I think for a lot of people it does go with a tremendous amount of guilt and shame and wanting to make things better, but if you are perhaps threatening, or blaming, one's reaction is to say, ach, you know, those radical women, and, you know, thanks very much, I don't need this. But I think the fact that you do it in such a soft, gentle, probing, interesting way, it starts a dialogue, and that's all we can have.
And on a final note, if you could go back and say one thing to Daisy as an adult, what would it be?
I'd say, Daisy, thank you for enriching my life and making me feel safe. And I've said me twice because it was all about me. And I'm sorry it wasn't more about you. And thank you for everything.
Oh.
Jeez. Okay. Thank you again. I think I've already said everything I have to say about you. And you really were, I mean, you know, we want to start exploring the journeys that different South Africans have had with this institution. Like I said, as a probe into who we are as South Africans, I think it's brilliant. And we've just gotten to know you as a human being so well, just through discussing this space, you know, this one role. And that's really the power of this role that we're trying to showcase. It really is such a mirror to ourselves and to our society, and also just a mirror, I think, in terms of our relationships, our interactions with one another. And yes, like, this has just been fantastic. Thank you. Do you have any final words?
No, I just want to say what is also very incredible about the show is that it's very easy when you are dealing with politics to have strong feelings. That feelings is even the wrong word. It's kind of like ego in terms of what you feel about different parties and things. I think the amazingness is this does tap into very, very real stuff. And I think that the only time there is change and shift is when it does become personal. And it's not about manifestos and policies and blanket statements around people. When you actually probe something on a very personal level that you can then make it, you can broaden it, but rather start with the personal rather than starting with the political, if that makes sense.
Absolutely makes sense. Yeah. Definitely. That's my school of thought. I'm very much human first.
But I know that doesn't always change the world, and bras needed to be burnt on a mass scale and uprisings.
No, I mean, look.
That's me.
There's various means. There's various means. There's various means.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on the Mate Sessions with Cliff Central.
Please make sure to follow our Twitter page on @MadeProject, that's MAIDE Project, as well as our Facebook page, which is The Made Sessions. And if you type in Made Project, you'll also find it. Have a good evening, guys.
Cheers.
Cliff Central.
The revolution. I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.